Welcome back to the program. It's become almost axiomatic that we fear change. But have we ever stopped to really wonder why this fear has become so universal? Is it change itself, or is there something else? We love the new, but part of what goes into that with change is ending something before we can begin anew. And this, the business of endings, we're not very good at. Ending a relationship, a job, saying goodbye, entering a new chapter in our lives, all involve endings or exits. Yet as our guest today, Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, says, too often we tend to ignore or diminish endings. We're going to talk about these endings today with my guest, Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot. She's a MacArthur Prize-winning sociologist. She's the Emily Hargroves Fisher Professor of Education at Harvard. She's the author of 10 previous books. Her latest is Exit, The Endings That Set Us Free. Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here.
It's great to have you here. Have we always been this bad at endings, at exits, or is there some nexus between us getting worse at this and the speed and the pace at which things move today?
Well, I think it is harder, for sure, now than it was a century ago or even a half a century ago, because we are moving so fast, and with the addition of technology, which makes beginnings and endings go so by so quickly, we don't even notice them. I mean, it's at warp speed. And in order to sort of pay attention to our endings, we've got to stop and witness it and regard it and reflect on it. You know, they need to be spaces in our lives that we pay attention to. And in order to do that, we need to slow down, that's for sure.
And there is the sense that without those spaces, without being able to define things in our lives with beginnings and with endings, that anxiety increases because it just seems to be one long, continuous process that sometimes we're not able to cope with.
Yes, I think that's right, that there is something very, very important about when we end something, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a job, whether it's the way we have identified ourselves, that it is very, very important to mark that moment and to really pay attention, because I really believe that those are moments of reflection, those are generative moments that prepare us for the next chapter in our lives. So these are very, very important. And because we are a society that moves so quickly and that always is tilting towards the future, poised for mobility, ready to seize the next opportunity, we miss those, what I think of as very precious moments of reflection and looking backwards.
And in fact, even in those places where we've kind of ritualized beginnings and endings, the simple process of saying hello and goodbye, We seem to be rushing through that as well. We don't do that with the same certainty anymore.
Right. And one of the things I discovered in talking with the numbers of people who I talked to about their exits is that they saw some relationship between those small, daily, ordinary, everyday goodbyes that are braided into our lives and the ability to mark and measure and pay attention to the large goodbyes that, in fact, rock our worlds and, you know, make life what it is.
What about the disconnect between what's really going on in our lives and when we mark those beginnings and particularly those endings? Because sometimes the end has happened long before we mark it, for example.
Right. I think that part of what we do is we end it and then we spend a lot of time and then reflect back on it. And I think that there's a way in which it's important to sort of be in the present in real time with our endings, right, rather than move way beyond them and then afterwards sort of look at them. Now, it is possible that sometimes we don't even understand something is ending. There are two types of endings that all of the protagonists in my book talk about. One is that moment in bold relief. It's dark, it's clear, when all the forces come together, all the sensations come together, and you say, I'm out of here. It's done. I have no choice. That's kind of bold and clear. But the other kind of ending that everyone talks about as well is when we look retrospectively and we realize, you know, we've been exiting for a long time, and it has been iterative. And it's been messy. There have been moments of retreat and moving forward. It's circled back. These messy endings always anticipate that moment that is bold. Right, and even after the bold moment of declaring, I'm out of here, there are often aftershocks of exiting where we question ourselves, where we feel ambivalent, where we feel lost and confused. So it's not a straightforward process. There is a moment that we can all identify. As a matter of fact, those moments when we say, I'm out of here, everyone remembers those vividly. Mm-hmm. You know, what they were wearing, how they were breathing, who they were talking to, how their heart was beating at meticulous detail. But there are also other kinds of endings that go on and on.
Even when there is a celebration to mark some kind of an ending, it doesn't mean that the ending is clean. You tell the story of a woman who was retiring and sort of had put all the processes in place to retire from her job and yet had trouble doing it.
Yes, this is Teresa, who started a wonderful, wonderful nonprofit 25 years before for adolescent young kids, rural kids, working class, who had really been pushed out of school. School had not been a successful place for them, and she developed this very, very interesting environmental education program for them, and she gave it her all. It was her complete life. It was her everything. She birthed it, she spawned it, and then she grew it, and 25 years later she realized that the organization, in order for it to grow, she needed to leave. And in order for her to grow, she needed to leave. And so she really staged this wonderful exit that was really thoughtful, and where the transition was made to new leadership, where there was a big, big celebration and ritual where everyone came from far and wide to thank her for her incredible service. And then when it was over, she felt bereft. And she felt marginalized, and she felt empty, and she felt ambivalent. In other words, even though this is something that she chose, even though she, in her rational mind, felt it was the right time and it was good, inside her, she was bereft.
And in many cases, we see that with people that retire, for example, even when it is planned, when they think they're looking forward to retirement, that the change in their life makes them ill or creates some other problem.
Yes, I think that's right, that that these are very, very major transitional moments, and they are full of, exits are always full of paradoxical sensations of loss and liberation. And sometimes they weigh more heavily at first on the feeling of loss until some kind of rebalance is found. But when we anticipate our exits, we shouldn't anticipate a smooth road. I think it is possible, but for most people it is a rocky road, and it is a hard road, and it requires this constant recalibration between loss and liberation.
And is this something that is just kind of inherent in us as a species, or is there something else going on here?
Well, I don't think that it is inherent in us as a species, because one of the things I have gathered from traveling a lot in non-Western countries, in other places, where, in particularly more agrarian societies, where there is so much more emphasis put on the sort of rituals and rites of departure. Not only the ultimate exit of death, but all along the way. I remember being in St. Petersburg in Russia and watching folks say goodbye at the train station and feeling, oh my goodness, this is a huge event. They're really making a big, big deal out of this. You know, there was weeping and there was waving and there were declarations of love. And I thought, what a beautiful way to leave. You know, and I hadn't seen that kind of elaborate, dramatic leave-taking in this country as much. And I think as I've traveled, I've seen other cultures and other societies give much more ceremonial marking to exits than we do in this country.
The other aspect in an agrarian society, for example, is a greater connection to the natural world and and the comings and goings, the endings that go along with that.
That's right. I think that's an absolutely right. I haven't thought of it that way, but this notion that we see this sort of natural endings and beginnings all around us, in animal life and in plant life, in the environment, that seems natural and seems worthy of marking and paying attention to.
One of the things you talk about is that even doctors, particularly doctors dealing with terminal illnesses, oncologists, cancer doctors, that deal with the, you would think deal with these issues all the time, even they have trouble understanding and dealing with the totality of this.
Right, I think they do. I mean, one of the doctors I talk about in Exit is unusual. He is a doctor who deals with very, very sick cancer patients. And he imagined before becoming an oncologist that it would require, in order to prepare himself for the death of his patients, it would require that he be sort of distant from them, highly professional, that the boundaries be drawn between himself and those he cared for. And what he discovered over time was that in order to be a good doctor, in order to say goodbye in a way that felt productive and even joyful in a way, he had to be in relationship with his patients. He had to not distant from them, but intimate with them, and he had to be a witness to what it is they wanted to do in those last, you know, weeks and days and hours, who they wanted to be with and how they wanted to die, and follow that lead rather than the way he was trained, which is to sort of pile on the interventions at the end, trying to prolong something which is inevitable. And so I think this notion of doctors learning, and probably it would be a good idea if they were taught this earlier in medical school, how to be in relationship in such a way that they guide and are guided by their patients in these last moments of the ultimate exit.
Of course, part of that is reflective of the broader problem of endings and exits, which is that we associate them with failure, as
yes.
Doctors must, as we do in many cases where we end something.
Exactly. I mean, one of the things I say is that in our society, we sort of think of exits as the negative spaces in our life journeys. We see them as moments of retreat. And if we think about beginnings and we see a person strong and erect and purposeful and leaning forward and moving on into the world, then we think about a person leaving and exiting as despairing, you know, and stooped and trying to really fade away rather than be seen in the light. And I think that in doing that, I argue that we really miss half of the life story, because at least half of our stories are about exits and some of our stories are about beginnings, but not to look through the prism of exit at our life experiences, we miss so many moments for marking. We miss so many moments where we might reflect on them more deeply and see them as moments of growth and change and evolution and development.
And we use that oftentimes as a kind of salve. I mean, with all the unemployment that's been going on, all the people that are leaving jobs, we tell people constantly that it will be the beginning of something better, that it's a good situation. And we often say that and don't really mean it.
Yeah, we don't mean it. And what's interesting that I point out in Exit is that that demographers are now telling us that our young people who are in their early 20s are going to have 10 careers in their life, long, long life, not just 10 jobs. So it will be important for sure for them to learn how to begin something new, but it will also be very important for them to learn how to exit where they are with grace, with care, with purposefulness.
In many cases, we've seen situations where people exit something, a job, a career, move on to something else, and really it's years before they're able to go back and really process what that ending was all about, both in terms of their own situation and the people that were involved.
Yes, I think that's right, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, I think people do this in different ways. I mean, the folks I talked to for this book, some were in the midst of exiting. some were anticipating an exit, and others were looking back over long years of time at their exit stories. And in looking back, they were not only reflecting and remembering, they were reinterpreting,
mm-hmm.
right? They were revisiting. They were rehearsing. In other words, it was a story that although it was an old story, it was being told in a somewhat different way after these years of reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's also a good, I mean, certainly a normal and good way of reinterpreting our past.
And it is reinterpreting in some ways. We're rewriting our own history in some regard.
Exactly. But if we don't notice the exits, we're missing part of our history, is what I'm saying.
Right. The other part is the degree to which we become trapped by our fear of endings and our fear of being willing to go towards that exit.
Yes. I think that's right, that because we see exit as failure, because we see exit as retreat, we don't dare try to move beyond the exit to the other side. And so I think it's partly overcoming that fear and finding a way to move forward. One of the people that I was talking to the other day was talking about the fact that he grew up in a home where he's now in his middle age, he's a middle-aged man. He grew up in a home where his father worked and they had one car. And his mother, who at age 24 had three children already, little children, and no car and had to stay at home all the time. And one of the things he remembers vividly, and he was only three, was his mother asking his father for a car, a second car, so that they would be able to move around, drive around during the day when he was all the day at work. And it was very interesting because they did manage to get a second car, which just stood outside in the driveway all the time. But the fact that his mother knew that she could go, that she could exit, liberated her enough so it was fine to stay at home.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting, I think, story that points out that somehow the thought that we can exit, that there is a possibility of exit, that we can choose to do that if we want, lessens the fear of being where we are.
And that is a big part of it, this sense of choice, this sense of the freedom that comes from knowing that.
Absolutely. I try to make the distinction between choice and agency on the one hand and control on the other. I don't think we have control over most of what happens to us in big ways in our lives, you know. But we do have choice and we do have agency. And I think that sometimes we do not at all seize the opportunities we have for making choice.
It's interesting to see, for example, in the business world, in the vernacular there, how the idea of an exit strategy has become something people talk about in that world.
Right. Even exit interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I think that sort of reduces it in my mind to something much too mechanistic, right? The language feels of strategy doesn't sort of reflect, I think, the sort of developmental and reflective moments that are there. I think it does, however, help us recognize that when we enter environments and we enter, particularly they're talking about work environments, that there needs to be the realization that there is the possibility of leaving, and we need to find a good way to do that.
How much of the problem comes from our unwillingness in many cases, or something else that we're not very good at mostly, in terms of just being reflective, being self-reflective in any situation, but those situations in particular, because they're so powerful in that regard?
Right. I think that that's absolutely right, that we are a society in general that is not very introspective or reflective or self-critical. And I think, again, this does require some pause, right? Some attention to the moment, some marking of the moment. And I think that we, in our own busy, complicated, fast-moving, tech, you know, cyberspace lives, we don't spend enough time, I think, living in the moment and pausing to reflect on it.
And do you think that this contributes, as I was alluding to in the introduction, that this contributes in some way to this sort of universality of fear of change because we're really not able to mark these passages?
Well, yes, and I think I was very interested in the way you introduced this segment because I do, in our conversation, because I do think that there is some sort of broader kind of apprehension and anxiety about making change, and obviously change requires that we exit something and move on to something else, and so that aspect of change that requires moving on is I think part of the difficulty and the complexity of regarding exits in a positive and productive way.
And some of that anxiety comes from this idea that we talked about earlier, that we're always just kind of hanging on, that there aren't those passages that are cleanly marked where we move out of one thing and into another. And that creates much of the anxiety.
Right. I mean, the importance, I talk about this a lot in the book, is the importance of rites and rituals for change and transition, you know, the importance of somehow embedding these moments of change and transition into community, you know, into a sense of community. The importance of imagining, storytelling, having great conversations with other people to help you chart the path. And so when we think about the ultimate death, the ultimate exit of death, for example, we want to leave, as I say, in the reluctant arms of the community. We want to be surrounded by community. We want to innovate or develop or live through a set of rituals and rites and ceremonies that allows us to embrace, again, these paradoxical sensations of joy and pain, fear and relief, loss and liberation. And I think rituals allow us to embrace those what feel like contradictory impulses in us.
And the other irony inside that, I suppose, is that we're constantly seeking some kind of narrative structure for our lives, but without understanding the endings, without those exits, there can't be that narrative.
Right, it's exactly right. I quote one of my favorite sociologists, W.E.B. Du Bois, mm-hmm. at the end of this book in a chapter called Grace, and he... In an essay that he wrote called Of Beauty and Death, he talks about the fact that beauty requires an ending, you know, whether it's a field of poppies or a life well lived. It requires an ending. Ugliness, he says, just goes on and on and on without ceasing and without ending. So there's something about completion. There's something about finding a way to mark the ending that allows it to be beautiful, allows it to be memorable.
Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, the book is Exit, The Endings That Set Us Free. Sarah, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
It's been a great conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.